Hi, this is Elmore Leonard. I'm listening to Film Sociology, and it's a real program. It's great.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplex and the art house. What's new on video and streaming, and you might also hear about some dead people we like.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Anyway, this is Film Sociology, where you'll find out what's the next cinematic marvel.
It was unbelievable!
And what's just a movie.
Shut up! My God, you have no freaking life!
Okay, here's your host and my dad, Matthew Soci.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. If you have a question or a comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. I'm also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soci. This show is available on iTunes, and like all of the podcasts here at WFYI, available on Spotify. Well, friends, we got through another week, and a little bit we will do the grab-a-pencil portion of the show where you tell me what you've been watching over the last week. Hope you got to see some good films which are new, or at least new to you, as well as falling back on old favorites. And we have company in the studio, and we'll get to them in just a moment. Now, anyway, in shameless self-promotion, I'm directing a stage version of Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, which is happening at The Cat in Carmel, October 7th through the 17th. Go to indiebardfest.com for ticket information on that, and we'll get to that in a little bit. So I have not been able to – my evenings have been shot. I've been in rehearsal, so I've been missing press screenings. Like the Bond film, the things you do for your craft, that's okay. But I do want to talk about a few things that I recently experienced on video. Now, a few weeks back, I talked about a film I got from Film Movement called Higher Ed. This was a film that was directed by Jean-Claude Lemarais. And not, you know, if you're into stoner comedies, you could do a lot worse, I guess. But another film that was sent to me via Lightyear Home Video that Jean-Claude is a producer on is a documentary called Black Magic Live, Stripped. And it's about the only black male dance revue in Las Vegas. And it talks about the origins of this organization, how there was some drama backstage because they brought in a celebrity spokesperson who wound up leaving and taking some of the dancers with her. And we get to find out about some of the men, the process, and the show itself, and the difference between strippers and dancers, as they put it in this. So interesting look into the business, and also the fact that trying to get into a niche in Las Vegas is very, very difficult. So, look for Black Magic Live Stripped, courtesy of Lightyear Video. Also sent to me by Cornet Films is a reissue of a documentary from the 70s called Nuclear Nightmares. This is hosted by Peter Ustinov. Always good to see Peter Ustinov, and hopefully he got paid well. And this is about the nuclear fears that were happening in the 1970s, as well as the history before that, and the elements of the Cold War. And despite the presence of Peter Ustinov narrating in some pretty interesting sets, some real, some not, it's a bit dry. And I know I've done a couple of these documentaries that are hosted by Ustinov, and he's the best thing about it. So if you're into old school, you know, scaremongering, Nuclear Nightmares is now out on Cornet. And friends, mine evenings when I'm not at work and I'm not at rehearsal are set. They are set for a while because I received, courtesy of Time Life Home Video, the ultimate Richard Pryor uncensored collection. It's 9 DVDs, if I remember correctly. I started with a documentary about Pryor from 2019, which I had not seen, and seeing some talking heads as far as fellow comedians and his influence, as well as talking about the influence of his films, which is part of the reason why I'm talking about it here on the show. Pryor was a great example of a comic who, let's face it, his concert films are the best things Pryor did in cinema. No disrespect to Blue Collar or Lady Sings the Blues, but you get him and him 100%. And some comics, it's a hard transition to go from the stage to the cinema because your instincts are used differently. You're maybe not able to use all of your comedic weapons, dependent because you are at times constricted by a script. But anyway, it talks about that. It talks about how he did some fairly decent films in the 70s and then some lackluster films in the 80s and made more money. That showbiz at times. But so anyway, it was a cool documentary on Pryor, and then I revisited his first concert film. There's three of them, of course: Live in Concert, Sunset Strip, and Here and Now. Live in Concert is just it's one of the best, and I know, which makes Sunset Strip even better. And those the what those two have in common, if you've not seen them, is comedy through tragedy, or in the case of Pryor, comedy through his own in troubles with in one episode the law and his health, and the other with his addiction. So anyway, it was good to revisit, and I always remember watching the first Richard Pryor concert film on Valentine's Day because with my daughter, and the boy who broke up with my daughter, you know why. So there. But yeah, I'll be talking more about. It's true. I'll be talking more about the Ultimate Richard Pryor Collection Uncensored, which comes out this week on Time Life Home Video. So we'll be talking about that quite a bit. As I mentioned at the end of last week's show, I was able to do a little update at the end of the program. But, of course, mourning the death of filmmaker Melvin Van Peebles. Never forget, friends, blaxploitation didn't start with Shaft. It started with Sweetback's Badass Song. And this week, Criterion has put out the Essential Films Collection of Melvin Van Peebles. Watermelon Man, Sweetback, Don't Play Us Cheap, and Story of a Three-Day Pass, as well as other special goodies. And hopefully I'll be getting this next week, and I'll be talking more about that on the program. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. And to borrow a line from Martha to George, we have guests, people. And they are here right now. Joining me in studio, one of the usual suspects on this show. He also helps turn the show into stage sociology from time to time. The founding father of Indie Bard Fest, director, and overall good egg, Glenn Dobbs. Hi, Glenn.
Hi, how are you?
And you brought company with you.
He
tries to bring in familiar faces or newbies into the film sociology terror dome. Ask this year, this time around?
Well, she's writing me a note here, but I think I know who her
get me out
is.
Of this.
This is Ms. Bobby Bai, and I'll let her tell you about herself.
Hi, Bobby.
She's a new actor to BARTFest this year, and I thought it might be interesting to hear Virgin Bartolator? I'm not sure what's
going
on. I'm not sure.
We'll be gentle, sort of.
My experience with BARTFest has been wonderful. My audition with meeting the people there doing the audition was awesome and fun. I actually had fun doing my audition, and, you know, that's unusual, isn't it? So just, but it was great. It was really just the directors, the atmosphere. It was just fun to go in to start this process, and then now being in Antony and Cleopatra as Agrippa. And I love the process. I love how they've cut the scripts, how they've kept the action, the relationships, but not made it so bogged down that you can't follow, you know, because there's a lot in Shakespeare. And I think that's because it's like radio. You have characters repeating what happens again and again and again. And I think that's because of how it used to be, that people were drinking, talking, you know, doing all that. Other things. And so it was very interactive with the audience, but people were in and out. So like radio, you never know when you tune in. So I love the way they've cut it, cut the scenes. I think the way to learn Shakespeare or experience it is on the stage. And I think they're doing a fabulous job of doing it. They're great collaborators. They bring in everyone's strengths, and they're looking at what the actor brings, but the director's working with that, his ideas with the actors. And the other night we had a scene where a couple actors weren't quite sure what was happening, and the director had an idea, and so we all were there, and we just collaborated, and I said, what if, because I know as an actor, I sometimes don't know where I am on stage, or where, like, how do I relate to this other person? What's going on? What is Shakespeare doing here? And they're watching Cleopatra's ships go, 60 ships just leave because mm-hmm. they've lost.
And we have all 60 in this show.
All the ships?
It's a big budget.
That's with a P yeah. at the end, friends. Yeah. You got to articulate. Yeah. So, you know, you mentioned it's, hey, you know, that's like when you say that Roman Polanski film, The Pianist. That's three syllables, friends. Yes. Don't speed through that. The APA. Hi, gang.
See, I don't need to come. Bobby just gave you the entire program.
Well, there. That's all right. You know, it's funny you mentioned radio. Because Glenn wants me about every 45 minutes in every show to go, part of the reason why Bardfest is here is from your patronage and from...
Yes, IndeedBardFest.com.
I'm not doing
that.
Pledge breaks during the show. I'm not doing that. So.
And the tickets are so reasonably priced. And it's just a great way to have your kids learn Shakespeare. And our scenes are fun and dynamic.
It's the best way to learn them. Now, we can't go into specifics about prices, but you can go to the website and find it's public radio. Sorry. but you know what? It's still good. Stick a crowbar in your wallet and go see some Shakespeare for crying out loud. Guess what? You're going to go see Macbeth when it comes to your local art house cinema. You might as well see it on the stage. And we'll get to that in a little bit. Glenn, what is this year's lineup as far as Shakespeare? Because we can shamelessly plug the other nonsense in a moment.
Well, we have something brand new this year that we're really excited about. We call it the Prestige Project.
Oh, God. Okay, full disclosure, here it comes.
No. Despite our wonderful host, the type of thing, we're very excited to have it. And what we wanted to do was bring adjacent to our Shakespeare shows, we wanted to bring classic theater.
Yes.
And we wanted to bring theater that we have some really outstanding actors. And we bring in a director. It's okay.
And story of my life. That's all right.
And we want to bring all together under one sitting. But then we wanted to do something more. We wanted to pick a material that would be both really challenging to the actors as well as challenging to the audience. And so we picked a Pulitzer Prize-winning, multi-Tony Award-winning, one of the greatest plays of the 20th century, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf?
Actually, it didn't win the Pulitzer. It near Pulitzer Prize-winning.
So it's Pulitzer adjacent.
Oh, very good.
Thank
yes,
you.
That's very smart. I remember I had to write when I was writing the trailer for last year's play. I went, oh yeah, it's almost. But anyway, yeah. Yes.
So. And this is the beginning of a tradition. We've already got a wonderful deep dive into Tennessee Williams for the Prestige Project next year. Mm-hmm. Year after that, we're hoping to bring Fences for the very first time. It's very exciting. And that is just the appetizer as we go into what we've got. And then for this time, we're all...
If your appetizer is Bergen and rubbing alcohol.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But then... Then we're all over the city this year.
Yes.
We have rotating shows at the Cat following Virginia Woolf, where we have the geopolitical romance of Antony and Cleopatra. Have Love's Labor's Lost, one of his earliest comedies. One of the only plays that he did is the entire thing is in poetry, mm-hmm. with a brand new director. With all kinds of new cast members that have come to the Bardfest for the first time. Just a beautiful, beautiful story.
And it's funny, too.
Yes, very funny.
Happens when four men swear off women to study them and then four beautiful women move in?
Romantic hilarity ensues. Yeah.
So what a fun show to watch.
It's very funny.
Yeah.
It has that line in it, when love speaks, all heaven is drowsy with harmony. It's just beautiful, beautiful stuff. And then we take a dive into modern times. We do the rarely produced Measure for Measure.
Cool.
Which is right at the heart of the Me Too movement, directed by Miss Paige Scott, and featuring local acting talents of Mr. Zachariah Stonerock and Ms. Morgan Morton, both of whom are just exceptional. And this guy that just is an amazing fellow, Mr. David Mosdale, will also be there.
Hi, David.
Yeah.
David's a regular contributor to Grab a Pencil, so thank you,
so
David.
So he's also coming in and anchoring the show. It's an incredible show, very intense show, and that's at the Indy Basile Theater.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have a brand new venue. We're over at Theater at the Fort this year out in Lawrence. It's been remodeled.
Yep.
It smells like new car. It's just
they have that scent at the car wash.
It's
yes.
Just it's gorgeous inside there.
Yes, it is.
And it's a lovely venue. And we're featuring our youth production of Macbeth. directed by Dr. Kathy Phipps. Mm-hmm. She has a doctorate in theater, which you don't meet many people who do that.
So there's two doctors involved in this.
Exactly. And she is known for lavish productions. She has a 30 people in this cast.
Wow.
With it. It's going to be just lovely, and they've already sold the first night with it, and we're still a month out.
Now, the last show she did, which was The Tempest, which I got to see, and people from Jamaica came out to see Tempest. So I hope folks from Edinburgh come to see their Macbeth and bring some brown liquid to go along with it.
Exactly. We have one final show.
Yes, you're doing fine.
One final show. Our finale this year is we present Elizabeth Rex by Timothy Finley. Elizabeth Rex is a true story. It was first presented at the Stratford Festival in Ontario. In 1609, Elizabeth of England decided that the Earl of Essex, her lover, had committed treason, and she sentenced him to die. And the night before, she was very sad about this particular issue and very depressed, and asked Will Shakespeare to come in and perform. He did. During the curfew that night, they were all sentenced to go out into the barn. And during the night, the reigning monarch of all of England decided to show up and visit them. And so you have to imagine you're the greatest ruler of the greatest power in the world.
And the queen shows up.
And you're the world's... And you're the world's greatest playwright. What do you talk about?
Things. Stuff.
And it's a beautiful story with some top-flight actors.
Some Falstaff-looking guy.
Yeah. So that's our lineup for this year. Mm-hmm. It's our biggest year ever, and we're very, very excited about it.
So when it comes to the season, does the festival select the plays, or is it the directors bring you a pitch? And as far as mixing
and matching.
What
the producers do is we do two things. Number one is we'll go and find a director like Bobby. And we'll say, Bobby, do you have a passion project? And she goes, I want to do the La Cage aux Folles version of Hamlet. I'm like, okay. she has an idea about she wants to do, say, Julius Caesar. And she is very excited about that particular project. And so we bring her on board. But then we go to Mr. Soucy and say, what do you want to do? And if he also says he wants to do a history play, we say, well, let's look at something different. And so what we try to do is we try to do something what I call commercial, say like Romeo and Juliet.
Right.
We try to do something that is a standard, like a history or something along that line. And then we try to do something that's rarely produced.
That's a great opportunity.
And so what happens is they all come together and you get to see a little bit of everything, what you want to do. And this year, what's really fun to say is we have 92 actors and staff. It's our largest Bard Fest ever.
Yep.
And it is the biggest single theatrical event of the fall. And we want you to be a part of it because the bottom line is if you like great stories, if you like to hear epic tales, we can tell them to you in a way that you won't soon forget.
Absolutely. So where can folks go for tickets and information and locations?
IndieBardFest.com.
Very good. Very good.
So. IndieBardFest.com.
And one other thing about IndieBardFest.com is the Virginia Woolf Project is under the subheading or the tab called the Prestige Project, because that's what we call it.
Yes.
So you'll find it there, and all the information and all the background story and a 7 or 8 page director's commentary note. with it, so it's good stuff.
Yeah, that's me, folks. And guess what? I'm recording the curtain speech. You've had it.
Okay, very good.
Well, I know by being in Antony and Cleopatra, we think we know the story, but there's so much more.
But that's another. But that's also another one that's not done a lot.
That's right.
So you know, you're right on it. So it's a good mixture, and I think there's also at times. Where certain companies like, there was a company this year that did Midsummer, and Midsummer's going to be done next year by a certain somebody, but we'll get to that. But there's also times where I got to tell some folks where my wife and daughter and I got to see three productions of As You Like It in 4 months. Like, Richmond did it, Bloomington did it, and Evansville did it. And when I directed The Christians, there were four theaters in Indiana that did The Christians in less than a year. So there's those aspects of it. I'm fortunate that, as I mentioned, full disclosure, I'm directing Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf, but Mud Creek Players is doing it in the spring. So, and I've met their director and producer, and so we've had fun chats, and you know, we'll see each other's projects and give notes.
But you see, that's a good thing though, because one of the things we talked about, like with a recent, it's not a Bardfest show, but it's an outstanding show to see, the Seneca and the Soul of Nero.
Yes,
that's art. Mm-hmm. And art is little bits of painting at a time until we can paint a bigger world and a better world. And so Virginia Woolf is an extraordinary piece of theater. And if Mud Creek does it, God bless them.
Yep.
Let's let people come and see things
and,
like that.
And it's going to be a cool, you know, compare contrast. When I directed The Christians, Muncie Civic, they did it the week after us. Mm-hmm. And it's theirs was different than ours. Cardinal Stage was different than ours. The Phoenixes was different than ours. So even though seeing As You Like It, and by the way, after seeing Three As You Like, I'm good for about 10 years. And that happens as well. But, you know, Richmond's was different than Bloomington's. Bloomington was different than Evansville. So, I mean, that's a great thing. If you love theater, you've mentioned before the cuttings, but yeah, also not just the cuttings, but also how you present it.
Right. I mean, we have one scene where the triumvirate, all three different, Mark Antony, Octavian, and then you have Lepidus, and they're all on stage. And what an exciting moment, because you have these three men who are powerhouse, run the world people, all on stage. They're all different. Their viewpoints are different. And it's just something that an audience, when do you ever get to see three men that run the world, you know, that change all history, and they all have a different take on what's happening. And it's exciting. So I don't know, I've learned a lot more. I just think Shakespeare has a way of pitting people, like seeing all different viewpoints, mm-hmm. and then putting them all on stage at once, and they're all right. I mean, in their own, if you look at it from it, so that you see that, oh, if you're in this position, this is how it is. And if you're in this position, that all these viewpoints, there isn't just one way of looking at life. And that's what I love about doing Shakespeare. And it's funny. There's always, like, we were laughing, the cast who's heard it before, laughing at Cleopatra and just things within the heaviness of life is so much fun too. And Shakespeare always has the body and the fun.
Well, you have to have funny stuff in tragedies, and you have to have some dark moments in comedies. I mean, it's just gray is the color. That is the color I think we all shoot for. I know the 8-page notes that a director has given, I've referred to Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf as a romantic comedy, a deeply dark and twisted romantic comedy, but one nonetheless. And I think everybody's individual audience members' relationship history is going to reflect on how they look at this show. For some, they think it's going
to be.
They think it's going to be just 3 hours, mm-hmm. hopefully. Three people, you know, four people, or two people screaming at each other. Or others that, you know, if you've been with another person for a long enough time, you have a shorthand. You have signals. George, as I think I wrote in a note, George and Martha are playing 3D chess while Nick and Honey are playing checkers.
And silence can speak much louder.
Yeah, Harold Pinter agrees as he writes for long stretches. But so I think there's that aspect of it. And the other, I think, great challenge is a lot of people know the film, and this is definitely not the film. This is, you know, kudos to Mr. Lehman for his adaptation of it, but this is a bigger challenge. So I think folks who either have never seen a production of Virginia Woolf or haven't seen it in at least 10 years, I think they're going to be able to experience this production with fresh eyes.
Yeah, and I think one of the things that should not go unsaid is this idea of what you think you really know about it isn't the same when you actually see it.
Correct.
People know bits and pieces about all of these particular stories, but when you see Mark Antony standing right there and hear the story for yourself, it's revelatory. It's a unique theatrical experience when you go do that. And the fact that we can do it in such intimate, small settings, where it's so much more powerful than some arena, you know, where you go into.
Yep.
That's what makes Bardfest such a unique experience for people to go see. So you say, oh, I don't like Shakespeare. Well, I'll tell you what, if you don't like romantic comedy, you don't like fart jokes, you don't like big poetry, you don't
violence,
stage concept, the ultimate romance, all of that was invented by this guy.
Political intrigue, yeah.
And he does it well.
And when it's done well, and we do it well.
He's pointing, friends. Just, but I don't know why at me, but yeah,
we do it very well.
If we do say so ourselves.
No, we do it very well. We take pride in telling really great stories.
Yep.
And so it's maximum entertainment. It just is.
That's pretty good. You should add that. I like that.
Well, even like the
maximum entertainment.
Yeah,
maximum entertainment.
He's one of my favorite Roman soldiers.
There you go. Maximum.
But even like Elizabeth Rex. We think of Elizabeth as the Virgin Queen, but
or Kate Blanchett. But yeah.
Well, she. Yeah.
Helen Mirren.
Yeah, that's true. But she loved the Earl of Essex. I mean, and he was a powerful warrior, and the way he thought versus the way she thought was very, very different. She said, I'm the queen of peace, and that's more important. And, you know, he's like, no, I'm the ego. I'm the king. I'm the, you know, and so just the different perspectives of how, different rulers and why he thought that he should be ruler. And, you know, she's even slightly jealous because the people are calling his name because of his victories. And so I'm just, you know, it's just very, but then seeing her on stage, loving this person so much, she's so torn up about it. So, I mean, that's a new perspective of looking at Queen Elizabeth. It's not one we get to see. Mm-hmm.
People come off the painting and become alive.
Very good.
So it's just.
I'm going to write that down, too.
Write that down. That's pretty good. this is just a fountain of inspiration, sociology.
That's right.
Now, the other part is there's a little bit of. Well, I'm not going to say art imitating life, but there could be some potential costumes and role playing involving the actors playing Antony and Cleopatra. There's a couple in your show.
Oh, costumes and role playing. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. You're not familiar with the concept of that,
Glenn? You're doing another deep cut on me there, Matt. Quite happenstance. The young lady playing Cleopatra is married to Antony. And so you can imagine
those fun nights at home.
Yeah, you can go home and giving each other notes. That must be a rather tense evening.
Well, that's why they're so good then, because they already basically have their lines. As I can see, I mean, like, that's great because we still have several weeks here. And I'm so impressed because they're just filling the lines and with humor and with. And maybe they practice at home a lot together, so that's awesome.
Oh, honey, you pass those potatoes faster than you pass that one. And also, full disclosure, Afton Shepherd is playing Cleopatra, but I saw her as Honey first. And she's in Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf.
Honey is a
character.
She,
yeah, I know. Honey's a character.
She walked into rehearsal the other day with this fluffy little skirt on.
Her rehearsal skirt, yes. Yeah, she has to look like the wife of an astronaut first before jumping into Antony and Cleopatra. Yeah, it's not very often I get to say, will you be my honey? And everybody knows exactly what I'm talking about. So writing that down seriously?
That's the third T-shirt we're going to get.
No, here's the thing I'm going to say, and if they hear this, I don't care. I've already talked to I've referred to my cast as my lovely quartet. When we go to the other production, we want black T-shirts that say George, Martha, sure. Nick, Honey, director. Yeah. We're going to look like Batman villain henchmen, but we want to go in for that. But no, I will tell the story. The first time I met Afton was at the photo shoot for Bardfest 2 years ago, the one where—
2018.
Was it 20?
Yeah, it's 2018.
2018, you're right. No, you're right. 3 years ago when I played Falstaff. So we're doing this at a local brewery, bar, place on Mass Ave. And we're in these various costumes. I'm in a kimono, as one would do, with a growler, as I would do. And there's this beautiful blonde model at the end of the bar. And we're getting ready for the photo shoot. And it's great.
I thought you were talking about me.
No, you're stunning, dear.
Yeah, that's
but no, but what's even funnier is Glenn saw me see Afton. And like a dog, he's like, Falstaff, get down. And so I'm going to hop up on the bar and say hi to Afton and be really, really super cool. The problem was the bar was slightly taller than I had anticipated. And so everything came to a halt to see this pudgy guy trying to climb up and land on top of the bar. And it took more time than I thought it really should have. And then finally, I just laid on the bar on my belly, hand on my head, holding my chin and saying, hi.
And then the shot we took.
Yeah. And then she booped me on the nose and a friendship was born. Very so good. That's my story. And I have dozens of witnesses. So. But yeah, so you know, it's there's a triple duty basically with Afton between Virginia Woolf 4.
She's in Elizabeth Rex too.
That's what I mean. So between all of this. So a little backstory
and
with
she did the King Lear play
that with Lear's shadow. So yeah, she's constantly working and for good reason. She's in demand. This has been we were supposed to do the show last year, but something happened.
Don't do that story.
No, I'm gonna. No, but I had 3/4 of this cast already selected before COVID hit, and I had to do Zoom auditions for the 4th actor. We got our 4th, so we had my quartet, and we started doing like everybody did. We'd kind of Zoom happy hour, and we're talking about the script and getting to know each other and having fun, and then. It was decided by the powers that be, and rightly so, that we would move the production later. So, but we had space and time and circumstances, and we wound up as a quartet doing a radio version of Neil Simon's Plaza Suite, which turned out to be a lot of fun. And for a lot of people, it was their first play after everything shut down. And I'm damn proud of that.
Oh, yeah.
It was,
yeah,
and the fact, because everybody was kind of scrambling to do small casts and socially distant shows, and you know this was a distant show because we were all on our own microphones and a sound effects table, so we were separate, and it was fine, incident free, happy about that. And so the fact that we had been, you know, we opened in a little over a week, and everybody's still gung ho, everybody's still in it. And I'm really, really proud of that. It's going to be sad when I have to break up the quartet and move on to you know, Elizabeth Rex. But it's been a great commitment. And also the fact that even when we get stressed out, we all are in the same boat. We've all been this for over a year and a half.
And you've been on the inside. And as a person on the outside who's come in and observed a few times, folks, you're in for a master class in acting.
Yeah.
You're in for watching 4 people that are at the top of their game. And you really have to be because of the material. But it's mesmerizing to watch. And when they're on, it's hugely entertaining.
Yep.
So we're very lucky. This is exactly what we envisioned 2 years ago when we first conceived this idea. And we're looking forward to it as our inaugural one and then see where it takes us from there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I when I say quartet, the other to mix in, you know, music with my arts is that, yeah, each member is a band leader. They are a force of nature in their own right.
Really,
and the
is.
Fact that they're all 4 running on all cylinders together is it's something to watch.
Right.
Something to watch. So, yeah, IndieBardFest.com. So we run Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf 1's runs the 7th through the 17th of October. Week from tomorrow. And then let's see, what we got do we have the dates? 22nd, October 22nd through the 31st. 1st or 30th for the Bard Fest for Measure for Measure, Anthony and Cleopatra, Love's Labor's Lost, and Macbeth Youth, right, as this is written. And then Elizabeth Rex is November 5th. Oh, Emma's birthday. Through the 14th.
We wanted to do it for Emma.
She's very excited for that. Thank you. I can hear her saluting from Chicago.
There
so.
You go.
Anyway, there you go. So all of that is happening. Go mark your calendars. And there's a chance to see 2 shows in 1 day.
Yeah.
Are you able to do some doubleheaders?
Well, that's how Antony and Love's Labor are doing their rotate.
There you go. Yeah. So you could do a double. It's fine.
And well, you can find them at the Cat or downtown.
Right.
So that if, you know, you are.
And one of the things we tried to do, I think Bobby alluded to this earlier, was we sort of, if I can borrow a very long-winded metaphor of Kevin Feige, you know, type of thing. Kevin Feige, with all these crazy Marvel movies, has a formula.
Yep.
And that's the formula we're going to use, and that's because we can get the maximum amount of entertainment and bang for the buck. And we sort of have done that to some degree with Shakespeare during our first couple of years. We didn't cut anything. And so on the fourth hour of King Lear, I had the people coming to me saying, is it over yet? So now what we try to do with all the shows is we try to keep all of the parts that are great, but we try to keep it to 2.5 hours at the max. And that way you don't have to go in and feel like that you're going to be pummeled with words for 4 or 5 hours as you go through. And people tell me that that's a fear that they have, and I want to make sure they understand that we've tried
to... No, this is action going on. There's real action happening in every scene. When you have three powerful, the triumvirate coming in, when you have Cleopatra and the soothsayer coming in or the messenger, and she's irate that, Mark Antony has married Octavia, and there's stage combat in it, and so there's what they've done is taken out all the wordiness of the I'm sitting here for 4 hours because I'm eating and drinking, and they've created a story.
I'm sorry, how did my character stay in Henry IV? Sorry, I'm just being
no, but one of the things she mentioned about the three powerful people, just everybody needs to know context.
Yep.
Julius Caesar was killed. And when Julius Caesar was killed, a civil war broke out.
Yep.
Mark Antony took over the treasury. And then Octavian, who is Julius Caesar's adopted heir, like he was an adopted son, not officially his own son. So then he decided he's going to confront Mark Antony, and Lepidus and Mark Antony are fighting together. And so basically you had in the West, you had Octavian, you had in the East, Mark Antony, and then you had in Africa, Lepidus. But Octavian is younger and he's fighting for his position and trying to prove that he should have it. And so he basically throws away the whole kingdom. It's not just Mark Antony's fault. Because when Octavia is sent to Mark Antony, she doesn't bring his troops with him. And so Mark Antony sends him back. So there's more to this marriage, that Octavian was supposed to be doing. So Mark Antony then goes to Cleopatra because she's got money and she's got his kids and she's got, he's her protection and she's his money. And, so there's a lot going on here, but it's not overwhelming because of how they've cut the scenes. And you're seeing this thing, then you're seeing this thing. So as long as Julius Caesar was killed, and now you have these three people who come together and then break apart, and Pompey is in there trying to keep grain from Italy and take over too, his own way.
And I think with a Shakespeare show, and this is for the rookies out there, the first 5-10 minutes, you just gotta ease in. It's like watching a foreign film, I think I always say. Just, you may don't get overwhelmed by the language, but also watch the behavior, watch the people. So,
and I think we're doing that well.
Yes.
I actually do. I think the way our director is doing it, Antony and Cleopatra, just how he's setting things up so you can see clearly where you are, what's happening at that moment. Like Octavia walks in and every spotlight's on her. And so you're clear about what's going on. And then you have Octavian. So the relationships are clear. And then what's happened is clear. You almost don't need – I don't think the words are overwhelming. I think they're real clear with the action that's going on.
One of the things that we try to do on IndieBardFest.com. Did I mention that?
You did.
IndieBardFest.com.
What is that again?
IndieBardFest.com.
Thank you.
And if you go to each play page, there's a synopsis at the bottom of each play
page. There you go.
So if you want to read some cliff notes before you go in to help you orient yourself to what's going on.
It's a play, not an exam.
Right.
So, don't sweat it.
Yeah.
So while we're at this, while we're promoting stuff, IndieBardFest.com, just a reminder, if you enjoy film sociology, if you enjoy all of the local programming here on WFYI and all things public radio goodness, please call 877-930-0221 or go to WFYI.org/give. That's where you can become a member, you can become a sustaining member, or you can renew your membership, either way. And friends, those who have submitted the grab a pencil portion, if all of you just put in $5, at WFYI.org/give. Well, I don't know if it would end the drive, but it would be a big dent. So 877-930-0221 or go to WFYI.org/give to support Film Sociology and all the shows, whether they involve me or not. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. As we mentioned, Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf is happening at the Cat. Measure for Measure, Anthony and Cleopatra, Love's Labor's Lost, and Macbeth happening as a part of Indie Bard Fest. And soon after that, Elizabeth Rex. Go to IndieBardFest.com for all the tickets, locations, and all that good stuff. All right, friends, shifting gears a little bit. Now, Glenn, have you been able to watch anything lately?
Yes,
I have a
whole list of movies. I'm ready for you this time.
Oh, really? See, so yeah. I love, this is great, and we'll get to the grab a pencil portion, but when people are like, all right, I'm ready, you know, because I normally ask on Thursday mornings, and I've had people go, can I submit it now? No, submit it on Thursday, but since I'm working ahead and it's family stuff, I'm asking for it now. So, Glenn, you've written down a list.
I have.
What have you watched?
First was it was such a guilty pleasure. Vacation Friends, the John Cena movie.
Oh, right. What happens on vacation stays on vacation kind of thing.
It's so ridiculously funny. It reminds you back of the old 80s days with those type of comedies. And, you know, say what you want about John Cena. He was very funny in the show.
He can be very funny. And if it keeps him from, you know, destroying his body at his at his old job, you know, Mr. Johnson knows what he's talking about. Go for it.
There was an African-American actor that was his opposite, and I don't know the gentleman's name, but, boy, he was channeling Kevin Hart. It was stupid, but stupid funny, and he just sat there and kept laughing and going. And I turned to my wife and said, I'm really enjoying this. You know, this is really dumb.
As Nigella Lawson once said, if you get pleasure, why feel guilty?
Right.
So.
I saw probably the best thing I've seen in a long time. It was on Apple TV. It was the stage version of Come From Away.
Ah, yes.
It's brilliant. It's basically... during 9/11, all the airplanes that were in the sky were forced to land in a small town in Nova Scotia, and what happened. And what they do is there's about 25 actors on stage, and they play every role, and the level of dexterity they do switching accents is just unbelievable. It's moving, it's funny, I can't encourage you enough.
Not enough shows done in Nova Scotia, by the way.
Right. You want to keep going down the list?
Please.
I loved Coda, and I think that's been mentioned before.
A few people have seen that, yes.
It's very, very good. It's another Apple TV type thing. It was very good. I did get a recommendation, and I watched it. I think it's Netflix. Everyone's Talking About Jamie.
Yes.
And another musical that began on the West End and was a hit in London, and this is its third incarnation.
Oh, wow.
And young man who's transgender, coming-of-age type movie. I watched a dystopian kind of thing. I'm about halfway through it. Why the Last Man?
Okay.
And basically some type of virus comes through. but what's interesting about it is it kills everything with a Y chromosome. Everything.
Hey, Nick, you hear that? Chromosomes. So, take that.
Everything with a Y chromosome. And so all the men die. And so it's a world without men. And before you go, yay, it's problematic. And there's all kinds of different things that occur with it. You know, for example, in the movie, almost 99% of the people that run Fortune 500 companies were men. And so there's nobody winning. Oh, armies. We traditionally have not had ladies in combat positions. That's changing now, but ladies in combat positions in armies. So you go from the most powerful army in the world to one that isn't the most powerful army in the world. And countries like, say, Russia, who have a tradition of having women in combat roles, suddenly move to the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
Diane Lane is in it.
Cool.
And she always plays intelligent women very well, very fiercely.
Yep.
So I'm looking forward to seeing
into
that.
I wonder if that's well thought out, though. See, I think if all men disappeared, would we have violence? I mean, women don't run things the way men do.
That's a common...
Have you gone on YouTube lately?
That's a common trope, and that's not true.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, women collaborate more.
They do. But the... like any type of dystopian type thing, when you get down to how we're going to eat, how we're going to feed ourselves, how we're going to get along, people get very survival-oriented. And so the movie points that out. I saw The Quiet Place Part 2, speaking of survival-oriented, and I'm a big scaredy cat, so I had to watch it in short little bursts.
That's all right.
I enjoyed it. I think Emily Blunt can do no wrong. She's just an amazing actor. I'm really enjoying Only Murders in the Building, the Steve Martin thing.
Yep.
And I got two more. There was a French murder mystery. I can't pronounce the French word of it, but it was on Netflix. It was in French, about a young girl that died, that was done very, very well. And then I went out and got my Marvel fix and watched Shang-Chi.
How'd you like it?
It was okay. It was one of the first times. I'm a huge Marvel fan, and I love the whole universe, and I love the big mythology of all of it, and I will go to all of them because I just really love it. But it's the first time I really began to see the formula that's used.
Welcome.
And and I thought, well, okay, there's an opening big violence, there's a middle small violence, and then there's an ending big violence, and it just kind of followed through with that. That being said, if you love martial arts, it's amazing what they do. And I can't imagine how long it takes for them to film those things.
Right.
There's a fight on a bus that is just shades of Jackie Chan.
How's my lady Michelle Yeoh?
Oh, she's great.
Yeah.
Oh, plus you would know him. He's apparently a legend. He's the villain of the movie. But he's a legend in Chinese Asian theater. And boy, did he have some gravitas.
Cool. I think it was at, hot scrolling action here on Film Sociology that happens here.
My understanding is he's a legend in Asian theater and sort of the...
Oh, Andy Lay?
I guess the best thing is like a Denzel Washington, know, with it. He has that kind of gravitas going on with it.
Yeah, walks in and you pay
you
attention.
Just pay attention
well,
to him.
And speaking of which, since you brought that up, yes.
Macbeth,
I'm very excited for that. Yeah. I am very, very, yes. So, and I generally don't review trailers because they're trailers, but I'm a Coen Brothers freak and I love Frances McDormand.
Oh, my God. Her as Lady Macbeth scares me just thinking about it.
So, and I know this is not a part, maybe it is or maybe it is not. I know Denzel wants to produce all of August Wilson's plays in the films. He's got two already done, and it's great. And I thought, well, if this is why you're doing Equalizer 2, I'm down with that. I'm absolutely down with that. So I think the fact that he's doing something for himself, doing Macbeth, because I know he did Julius Caesar on stage in New York many years ago. And I'm very excited about this. So very, very cool. You need to watch stuff to unwind, Glenn. That's a good list. That's a good list.
Well, you know, I have these film friends that tell me that
yes.
I have to that are cinephiles.
I throw titles at them all the time, and it's just whatever.
They go over my head. I know.
Have you, Bobby? Been able to watch anything?
Well, I've been watching Pennyworth. I watch kind of weird things. Wyatt Earp. I mean,
have you heard this show? You know, you're fine. You're doing just fine.
So I'm like,
which Wyatt Earp did you watch?
Just the one on Netflix.
Is that the Kurt Russell one?
That's with
Tombstone.
A woman. She's the daughter.
It's a new series.
Yeah, so she's the second daughter, actually. So she actually shoots her father when she's a child, and everyone thinks she's nuts, and she sees demons, but she's out killing demons. But it's a lot of fun to me. Yeah. It's not... I guess it's not real. So, like, some shows are just so heavy, you know, now. Everything has to be
like Shakespeare?
Well, no, I don't find Shakespeare.
Wow.
Shakespeare's, like, these glorious battles and these big queens and kings and normal people, you know, having fun in a bar. I don't know. I feel like today we just wait. Everything has to be the biggest drama and the biggest. And I'm like, I got enough of that in real life. Come on, I want something funny. So I like Melissa, like McCarthy.
Oh, yeah.
McCarthy.
Yeah.
So although not her latest thing, Nine Perfect Strangers.
She's
supposed to have a new movie out. It's supposed to be pretty good.
I think so. But I think she's getting past. I think I might have to retire the snark of, hey, what's that Melissa McCarthy movie where she falls down? Right.
Yeah. Well,
so,
I think she had, there's something new, the starling. And
That's it.
So I think that, and I'm like, I've seen the trailer, and I'm like, I got to watch it just because it's her. And she always brings some comedy into whatever it is she's doing. And she has her own personality, so I like
she's
that
in actors.
She's a huge talent.
Yeah,
I just, I find her fun to watch. And yes, it may be heavy, but it she makes it light and livable.
She
and,
does that in Perfect Nine Perfect Strangers as well.
So I don't know. I just, and I like Gilmore Girls. I like things that take
my wife
language.
Just finished the entire, just binged the entire thing.
It's the language of it. And the funny, like how you take context of where you are and then change it into funny. So I like shows that do that.
But there was a stretch, I think it was before and during COVID, where my wife is the night owl of the group. I'm usually in bed first sleeping. And anyway, there's those moments where she's watching something on TV and it enters my dreamscape. And sometimes it's cool. And there's been a few times where I went, honey, did you watch Gilmore Girls last night? And she goes, yeah. And I said, okay, because, you know, take it for what it's worth. Lauren Graham was in my dreams.
That's not such a bad thing.
No, it's not a bad thing. I also said, keep watching Cheers with B.B. Newirth. But anyway, I get that.
It's weird that you mentioned that. A number of years ago, I had a small surgery, and I went to they put me out, and when I woke up, my lovely wife was there beside me, mm-hmm. and she once I kind of got a little oriented, she says, "Why were you talking about Ally McBeal?" And I said, "That was a TV show at the time." I said, "I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And I really have no idea. And I hadn't seen the show. And I really hadn't seen the show."
Right.
And she just goes on and on. And he says, "You just kept going on and on and on about Ally McBeal." And I said, "Okay, great. That's just lovely."
This is the part where I used the term sitcom wife look. You don't want to be on the receiving end of that.
Yeah,
so.
Exactly.
Well, cool. All right. Anything else on your list there, Bobby?
I don't even know. I've been watching Grace Under Fire. I love that she used to be a comedian.
Brett Butler.
I know that she's had problems with drugs and all that kind of stuff. But I just, again, the words and the comedy and the quick, she just amazes me with.
Brett Butler, I'm familiar with that. Where's she from again?
South.
The comedian, the actress.
Yeah, she is, but she's Grace Under Fire.
But didn't
like
she used to do
show.
Something else?
That was it.
Yeah, comedian. And then now she's doing, like, she did movies, and now she's actually coming back, I think.
Doing stand-up?
Doing other films, I think. Right. So, yeah. And I just find her, she just seems to be able to take a character and make it her own and make it real.
Yeah, she. I'm sorry. My mistake to the fine people of Montgomery, Alabama. So that's where she's from. But yeah, she did a few episodes of The Morning Show and 6 episodes of The Walking Dead. He says reading a screen. So there's that.
I know who this is.
Yeah, you know.
I know,
you know
who this is.
That's fine.
Okay.
I just love her comedic timing. Yeah. I love the way she turns words, and then you're somewhere else. And I just find her really. Witty and real and able to embody a character and take you with her.
Very good. All right, friends, shifting gears a little bit before we get to grabbing a pencil and talking about what you've been watching. Over at the Tibbs Drive-In, because of the time of the recording, everything's TBA. So look into it, especially on Friday when it opens, when they have the dates there. Over at the Skyline Drive-In in Shelbyville this weekend, Friday the 13th, the original. A Nightmare on Elm Street, the original. Freddy vs. Jason, sure. All of that is happening next this weekend at the Skyline. Friday, October 8th, is Drive-In Massacre. Two nights of horror film insanity, as it says. And then October 15th, Halloween Kills plus TBA. So that's happening over at the Skyline Drive-In in
TBA
Shelbyville.
Is so frightening.
They play everywhere. Movies, plays, bands. They get booked all the time.
I have their shirts.
Yes. Over at the IU Cinema on Tuesday, October 5th, programmed by IU Cinema Marketing and Programming Coordinator Alyssa Brooks, one of the staff selections from 1991, Ridley Scott's Thelma and Louise. one of the all-time great road trip pictures. So being able to see that on a big screen, that is a must. Thursday, October 7th, as a part of IU Cinema Under the Stars. This is taking place at Memorial Stadium on Thursday, October 7th at 8 o'clock. The original, well, the 1999 first Mummy film with Brendan Fraser. Sunday, October 10th, as a part of the Sunday Matinee Classics at 1 o'clock, the original Night in the City with Richard Widmark. Thursday, October 14th at 8 o'clock. This is also at Memorial Stadium as part of IU Cinema Under the Stars, What We Do in the Shadows. That is Thursday, October 14th.
Movie.
Yep. Yeah. So that is all happening there. At the Historic Art Craft Theater in Franklin this weekend, Friday and Saturday at 7:30 p.m., and then Sunday, October 3rd at 2 and 5:30 p.m., Hocus Pocus, which is also being done in Lawrence on Saturday, October 16th. Films at the Fort, an October double feature of Hocus Pocus and the original George A. Romero classic Night of the Living Dead. Jay Hemphill, who we have mentioned many times on the show, is going to be a co-host of that, as will yours truly. So hope to see you if you're not at Virginia Woolf or Indie Bird Fest. Anyway.
No, don't say that.
Other shows to be there. Come to a Thursday. You know what? Come to a Thursday show. The Thursday shows are great. Anyway, that is happening in Lawrence. Speaking of the Art Craft Theater, on October 8th and 9th at 2 and 7:30 p.m., the 1964 film version of The Mask of the Red Death for you fans of Vincent Price. So that is happening at the Art Craft Theater in Franklin. I mentioned Hocus Pocus and Night of the Living Dead Saturday the 16th at Lawrence. And at the Can-Can this weekend, that's the Can-Can Cinema, Azor and Wife of a Spy this weekend. Coming October 3rd, Three Corners of Deception. On October 8th is the film Lamb. October 17th is Rescue. And, of course, the One Race Human Race Film Festival on October 3rd, as well as the Heartland International Film Festival, which is running October 8th through the 16th. So all of that is happening at Can-Can. All right, friends, it's time to grab a pencil. Let's find out what you've been watching. We start on Facebook with, because Big Brother puts it on a last week's post, not this week's. But we start with Austin, for you fans of the Medium Cool podcast. From 2004, Bad Education, for you fans of Pedro Almodovar. From Beyond and The Beast of War. Moveen writes, okay, I succumbed to Star Trek, Star Trek Beyond, and Star Trek in the Darkness. Love the plot line with Spock in the present and Spock in the future. Glenn, how are you on Star Trek? I can't remember if I've asked you that.
I have been.
No, that's right. That's right. That's right. You had the great Christmas, the great
birthday gift. I have sat in the captain's chair.
Now that we've said yes.
Really? You want me to tell that story?
Sure. You got time.
As he looks at the clock.
Well, you brought up time first.
I did. I'll tell it quickly. A long time ago, I was living in Los Angeles. My wife decided to get me a birthday present, and we had done before. We had, gone in to see game shows and things like that. The Warner Brothers studio in Paramount was nearby. And so I said, well, we're going to go to Paramount. And I thought, well, we're going to go see another game show or watch a sitcom. And so we get all ready to go, and we arrive, and they said, no, you're not seeing a sitcom. And we're there for Star Trek The Next Generation. and to spoil things for everybody, the Enterprise is in a big black room. It's just the whole ship.
Nice.
So we went in, and we had a production assistant to give us a private tour of the ship, which is a series of rooms inside a big warehouse.
Wow.
We started off at the bridge, which is their biggest set, mm-hmm. and he was saying, this is this and this is that. Of course, we're all looking around, and he looked at me and goes, you want to sit in it, don't you?
Did he know it was your birthday?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And I sat down. And then I have my we went around the thing. And I guess the thing that's for you as a cinephile that's kind of a fun thing was to watch them make this thing, to watch how it's done. And the first thing that strikes you as a novice is you go, how incredibly fake it looks. No, I'm talking about even the actors. They're just very fake looking in terms of, let's go get them, guys. Run.
Right.
But then when you actually see it, they had the sound effects, the music, the whole background, the camera moves a different angle. It's not what you saw when you saw it live. And so one of the things I'm fascinated by famous directors like Ridley Scott and other people like that is to be able to see the finished product, you know, when you're...
As you're making it,
when you're looking at some guy in front of a green screen. So we went around to... And then I have my embarrassing celebrity story. There was Brent Spiner, the guy who plays Data. I told you this before.
Yes, I know.
And he was walking up, and I just nearly had a Big Bang moment with it, you know, and leave that alone. And the... I walked right up to him and said, "Hi, I'm Glenn. I'm a big fan." He goes, "Thanks." And I had nothing else to say to him, and so I just turned and walked away.
That's all right.
Yeah. What a great wife, though.
Yeah. Oh, she's wonderful.
Yes, she is.
She's wonderful. And how we did it, by the way, is her father was friends with a fellow that worked in the studio. And if the actor shot a laser and there was a little explosion, he's the guy that made the little explosion happen.
Very good.
That's how we got on this.
Very important person.
Yeah.
Very good. All right, back to the list here.
Sorry.
I asked for it. It's okay. Deb writes Quiet Place 1 and 2, Cruella, Black Klansman, and then in parentheses, spent a ton of hours on airplanes. Well, that's going to happen there. JD writes Alien and Aliens. Bob Bloom, fellow IFJA member, Dear Evan Hansen, I don't know if you saw the original or the de-aging version of that picture. Christian writes, don't know if it counts, sure it counts, but the mid-2000s Battlestar Galactica miniseries that kicked off the series. Not really technically a movie, though, but Christian, that's never stopped people from submitting anything on Facebook when it comes to this show.
Love that show.
Linda writes, Silver Linings Playbook, still great. Terry writes, Center Stage, Fighting the Mob, The Story of Carmen Basilio. Don Hipschweiler, our very own Don, writes The Courier. Joni writes, My Fair Lady, the current miniseries of Vanity Fair, and 16 Candles. Doug writes, the Burns, McMahon Burns documentary Muhammad Ali, plus Born to Dance, Showboat, and The Trial of the Chicago 7.
That's a great picture.
Cruella was also a surprise to me, because normally when you have these stories, they're just very formula, but it was really well thought out, and really it went places you didn't expect. So anyway, I heard that one in there and just thought I would.
And remember, if you need to know if a film is set in London, use London Calling. Or, you know, Dropkick Murphys if you want to let them know the film's in Boston. Jay writes, we saw Cry Macho and Dear Evan Hansen. Now there's a double bill. Chris Lloyd, our very own IFJA Chris Lloyd of the film Yap, The Addams Family 2, and Old Henry. Tony Armstrong, one of my actors. Bonnie and Clyde and Cinema Paradiso. Dee Dee Sorvino, of course, writes Goodfellas. She writes that every week. Drinks with Dee Dee podcast. When I'm done with theater, I will return and be a panelist on that show. Always fun. Abby writes Midway, Hacksaw Ridge, and then I'm still working through my current library stack. Abby, work your library stack. Friends, always go to your public library. They have a great movie selection.
They do. That's where I got Pennyworth.
See? Exactly. So... Elaine writes Mystic River. Eric writes Candyman, thanks Brian, as well as Mars Attacks. Russ writes Victor Victoria. Craig writes 4D Man and Heavy Metal 2000. Okay. Hey, Craig. David writes Goodfellas. Dee Dee approves. Brian writes Titan. Different Brian. Murph the Surf and Cabiria from 1914. Taylor writes Magnum Force, Where Eagles Dare, Hellbound from 1956, The Gambling Lady, and Shazam. Thank you, Taylor. Teresa writes Ocean's 8, Life of the Party, and Little Darlings. Wow, I need to revisit that. That's been a long time. Melissa writes Rebecca, the new one with Lily James, as well as The Starling and Radium Girls. David writes The Night Eats the World, Dear Evan Hansen, and Cry Macho. Daniel writes Elegy and Secret Ball, Strictly Ballroom, sorry. Jeff writes The Rocketeer. Hello, Jennifer Connelly. Lila writes, now Lila's a friend of mine from college. Well, Chris is in town, so we watched Xanadu and made my husband and children suffer through it. Yes, you did. You did. And, of course, Dee Dee Sorvino loves Xanadu. I have to mention that. Keith writes, Miss Pettigrew lives for a day and all about Steve. That's another double feature. Austin, as I mentioned before, Dear Evan Hansen and The Conjuring. Mary writes, The Devil's Rejects and The Day the Earth Stood Still. I'm hoping it's the original, not the one with Keanu Reeves. Kurt writes, History Boys was the Saturday feature at Bell Trace. Kurt is in charge of the movies at a senior facility, so I like that. That's, you know, always keeping me posted on that. Terry writes, Dead Man, the Jim Jarmusch music western from 1995. Gary writes, The Interview and The Matrix. Chloe writes, Annette. I'd love to hear what you think about that, Chloe. I really dug it. It should have been shorter, but it's got pure chutzpah. So any musical with Marion Cotillard and Adam Driver, that's pretty good. Rebecca writes, My name is Pauli Murray. Mark writes, Count Me In, Poetry, Echo in the Canyon, and The Nowhere Inn. Beverly writes, Summer of Soul and Black Klansman. There's a double feature. And finally, Britt writes Crimson Peak, Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, you know, the refrigerator one, Wedding Crashers, The A-Team, and the most recent Fantastic Four. So there you go. That's what you've been watching, friends. So hope you jotted down some titles and have a little cross-pollination there. All right, friends, some words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
Go see a good movie. You deserve it. There's plenty out there. Go see some live theater. It's okay. It's going to be fine. You haven't been to the theater in a while? Go check it out. IndieBardFest.com. You can see the four shows. You can see Elizabeth Rex after. You can see Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf before. But yeah, IndieBardFest.com for all the times and dates and locations and prices and all that. So Glenn, Bobby, thank you for hanging out.
Thanks for having
us. Thank you. This was fun.
This is
you
why
you made
we
me
do
want to watch all these movies.
You've been warned. No, and if again, 877-930-0221 or go to WFYI.org/give, kill that, to support public radio goodness and film sociology. It happens. Phones ring. Anyway, and hey, this is happening, friends. This is your, these are your pledge dollars at work. So anyway, go see a good movie. You deserve it. Go see some live theater. And until next time, take care, everybody. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film podcast here at WFYI.org. Good afternoon, California. Good afternoon, Fort Myers. Good afternoon, Michigan.
I can't believe you let her watch Manos. Is she scarred for life?
Let's put it this way.
What kind of parent are you?
When I wake her up, I vocalize the theme to wake her up to get her ready to school.
Oh, you're a terrible father.
We'll do it live.
Okay.
We'll do it live!